Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. It's the 3rd of May. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday. We have a great panel for you, and eventually they'll all be assembled. We have Alan Chartok and Ira Fussfeld coming in. They're just finishing up the media project. J.P. Miller, who's usually here on Tuesday but can't be with us next Tuesday, and I wasn't going to let him off the hook that easy, so I said, hey, can you come on Thursday? And he is here very nicely, so we thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me, and it's like the same type of place on a Thursday as it is on Tuesday. It's crazy.
Only with less panelists.
Less panelists, yes.
And Vera Acarias-Kelly is with us from Siena College, a professor of comparative politics, and it's a pleasure to have you here each and every Thursday.
Well, thank you.
Very nice to have you with us. Also on the program, Dr. Alan Chartok is here, walking in right now, has just completed the media project because somebody...
Because Rex was late.
Very nice to have you all here now.
Rex is always late.
Well, we missed you.
Did you?
Yes. We had a couple minutes to blather on to Phil while we got you in the studio. Ira Fussfeld is with us as well. Good morning, Ira. Very nice to have you with us.
Nice to see you. Thank you for pronouncing my last name correctly. I know there was a big controversy over the Rosenstein, and it's either Fussfeld or Fussfield.
Fussfield.
Well, no, I'll tell you very briefly. When I was in basic training in the Deep South, the drill sergeant called me Fussfeld. And you know you weren't going to correct the drill sergeant, so Fussfeld it was. And then 7 or 8 weeks later, near the end of basic training, somebody asked me what my name was, and I said Fussfeld. which speaks to the brainwashing of basic training.
Yes. So.
I would rather you didn't call me Fussfeld.
No, we'll call you Ira.
Okay.
Ira Fussfeld.
Yeah, I don't like that name, but that is what it is.
Yeah. Well, good morning, all, and welcome. We have a lot to talk about. So I woke up this morning, and I had seen this the night before, but I just like the way that JP put it, so I'm glad he's on the air this morning on the Empire Report. Rudy Schocker. A Rudy Schocker. And that's exactly what happened last night when our friend Rudolph Giuliani, and isn't he our friend, he goes on Hannity last night, Sean Hannity's show on the Fox Network, and says that...
Where else?
Says, this gets confusing only because it is not consistent with the story that other people who were representing the president has told. But he said on Wednesday that President Trump reimbursed his personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, for a $130,000 payment that Cohen had made to porn actress Stormy Daniels, contradicting the president's account of what he knew of the arrangement for keeping her silent about an affair she says she had with Trump. I'm giving you a fact that you don't know, Giuliani said, the former New York City mayor who recently joined the president's legal team, told Fox News. It's not campaign money, no campaign finance violation. They funneled through a law firm and the president repaid it. This seemed to contradict Trump's public statements on the payment, which has become a subject of a criminal investigation into Cohen, whose residences and office were raided by the FBI last month. I don't pretend to completely understand this story, but did they not just throw Michael Cohen completely under the bus?
As I watched it, I thought that it was possible that Cohen told Trump, look, I'm not going to cover for you on this. I'm going to tell them the truth. And so either I can tell them the truth or you guys can get ahead of it. So I think that's how I viewed it, was that it was going to come out, certainly. Cohen has been under investigation from Mueller and his team, and this was their way of getting out the facts as they are now. I'm sure they could change by tonight or tomorrow.
Like an alternative to those facts.
Yes, and I didn't watch it last night, but I watched the replay this morning, and it was a bizarre interview, and you can barely call it an interview between Hannity and Rudy. It was almost like they didn't know that the cameras were on. Rudy was basically saying, yes, okay, so there's been a lot of lying, but it's not illegal. And it was bizarre. It was a bizarre piece of footage.
A lot of crazy in those eyes.
A lot, yes.
Yeah. Alan, what do you think?
Well, it's an extraordinary advance in the story. So Rudy comes on as the lawyer, and he immediately says, I'm going to make things right. He finds out, as JP has correctly stated, that they are in trouble in a number of areas, and he's going to clean them up. And one of the cleanup areas is this business about, did Donald Trump know? We all know he stepped out in the plane. He talked to the reporters. You remember all of that? No, I didn't know. So now he knows. So what are the consequences for the president of the United States to continually lie? I said lie. Remember, in the beginning, we weren't allowed to say lie. Nobody liked the words ascribing.
I've been saying it. Right.
Horshack, it was you. Fussfeld. But yes, it is a disgrace. Now, will this change the minds of the 30%? Probably not.
But if so, this is the part I don't get, mm-hmm. because Cohen had said that he used his own money and was not reimbursed for the payment by the Trump campaign.
And you'll remember when he said it, his pants were on fire.
Or the Trump organization. But then Giuliani says that Trump paid him back, although, quote, Trump didn't know about the specifics about it as far as I know. Well, how do you are you just going to give somebody $130,000 without knowing the specifics of it if that story is true?
Well, if Cohen is a fixer, which we know he is, he may just be on retainer. And you may just say to him, this would be the best way you could say it. Okay, you know, you're doing your business. Here's my bill. Here's your bill for this time. So I'm going to just give you the money. But no, he's a liar.
It sounds, what you just described sounds like what their argument would be, the retainer argument. Here's my bill this month for being a retainer, and here are my related expenses.
What about the theory that Giuliani just sort of, you know, like JP said, he was sort of feeling very comfortable with Hannity, and they had a chat, and he sort of forgot that everything was being taped, and they were, you know, because at some point he said,
"You want to make news? Let's make news.
Yeah,
here's a little nugget.
Here's a little bit of information that's a fact, but you don't know about it." And then he disclosed it. Is it coordinated? Was it a purposeful slip by Giuliani, with or without coordination of the White House?
Well, he said, Vera, if I may, he said, "We're going to make. I'm going to give you some news."
Yes.
So he must have been aware what this was going to do.
Yeah, Joe, do you know whether that program is recorded? I don't think it's always a live program, if ever. Much like O'Reilly was always taped earlier in the evening, so last night's may have been. But if it wasn't, if it was business as usual, Hannity could well have just edited that program and all of that out of it. So.
You ask a good question, Ira. I'm not 100% sure, although I do know that in the old days, 2 years ago, before O'Reilly left, the show was live because Hannity did his radio show up until 6 o'clock.
Well, okay. I think that I, for some reason, in the back of my mind, I hear 7 o'clock as a recording time.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Now yeah. I can check on that.
Another interesting part of the interview was that Giuliani used the word funnel. They funneled the money through the law firm to the porn star. It was bizarre. And his basic point is, okay, this is all true, but no Russian collusion.
If you
kept going back to Russian collusion.
Right. If you take a look at the disgraceful Sarah Sanders, Huckabee Sanders, and what she does, she works for the president. He tells a lie, she reinforces the lie. Whereas Giuliani is a guy who likes his face up there. You know what I mean? He's a guy who was America's mayor. He was allegedly. He was America's mayor. He's obviously got huge ego needs, and he goes and he does this. I don't see, I'm with you, Joe, I don't see how this helps the president.
Well, again, another sign of my life, but I read this morning the Washington Post had the transcript of an interview that Bob Costa did with Giuliani after the Hannity interview,
right.
He asked all the relatives, a tremendous interview, and Giuliani stands by what he said. He says Trump was happy with the interview. He talked to him afterwards. And to the extent that trying to explain the legalities of all this, I invite you to read it and try to weed your way through it.
Well, Ari, you're right. Clearly, they were trying to get out in front of something mm-hmm. that was coming their way, of a missile that was coming their way. And by doing it this way, they say, well, we said it ourselves, as opposed to somebody, you know, doing it as an exclusive on the front page of the Washington Post or the New York Times.
But Giuliani is also an independent actor in some ways because he likes media attention.
Absolutely.
He's just he likes to, I mean, in that sense, I think it'll be interesting to see how the two men, Trump and Giuliani, might actually compete for coverage. And I think that may have been a first salvo last night because Giuliani likes to be his own man. He likes to be he likes to be of interest. So will this be a lasting alliance? I'm not so sure.
Well, you can't imagine it being, right? I mean, because there isn't such a thing really in this administration yet anyway, except for the kids.
Yeah. And there were continual stories in the paper about how Giuliani wanted a big job in the Trump administration.
He did.
Either attorney general or secretary of state or something like that. And there may be a little bit of some of that angst coming through here as he submarines, which is, I guess, the right word, the president.
Well, and he's still gunning for AG, isn't he? I mean, it seems like he would be very interested if Sessions was removed.
Well, you know,
and
there was
Giuliani
a reason.
Would be.
I'm sorry, Vera, but you know, there was a reason that he didn't get it.
Sure.
There was a reason. Something wasn't right. I think that probably has not gone away yet.
Well, you have to wonder what that is when you see who else was picked, right? I mean, if you're given the background of other people, why would you back off on somebody? It could have been pretty bad. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, because Gingrich didn't get anything, Christie didn't get anything. I mean, we assume that Romney didn't get anything because he just hated him, right?
Exactly.
And that may be part of it, too.
And going back to, I think, the point Alan was making before about who do we believe and how do we believe this, most of the people who watched Giuliani on Hannity did not change the channel afterwards to look at the reaction on MSNBC and CNN. All they absorbed was what Giuliani said, and they're prone to believe it. It could have been World War III based on the other two news channels, which just reacted with fury, in my opinion, rightly so, to what Giuliani said, but certainly negatively, and proposed here's why this was negative. You didn't hear those negatives on Fox.
That show is live, by the way. For several years it was taped when it aired later, when they moved him up in the time when O'Reilly moved in September. They started to do it live. He does tape on Fridays.
Okay, because that means that I was going to give Hannity credit for not editing it out, but he didn't have a chance.
Right. So let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and we will talk about other stuff as well. We'll get letters and all of that. We have Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, Ira Fussfeld, and Vera Akarios-Kelly on the panel this morning. We welcome your thoughts. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. And we will be back. Fussfeld. Yeah, Ira Fussfeld. The great Fussfeldian. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and we welcome you. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan has a few in front of him right now.
Yeah, one of which proves how prescient this panel is. It says, Robert, our old friend Robert, says on the subject of Giuliani, good morning, panel. I'm wondering if that interview was Giuliani's payback to Trump for not getting the Secretary of State job. You never know. And that's from Bob. And we agree with Bob.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's the one he really wanted. He wanted to be Secretary of State. Yeah.
And Keith says, Rudy, about Clinton. Good morning, panel. Last night, Giuliani said that Hillary is going to jail. Rudy is such a bad lawyer and awful person that he forgot the statute of limitations ran out in 2017 for any imaginary crime that Hillary may have committed while Secretary of State. These people are the worst and are a national embarrassment, and that's from Keith.
Yeah. He also called Comey a perverted man, and I think he made reference to, or it was either him or another interview, made reference to the FBI people as stormtroopers.
Yes, he was certainly on the offense on Trump's the people against Trump. So he called Hillary a criminal, he called Comey a criminal, and he said the Justice Department is a disgrace right now.
And who's going to clean up the mess after this is all over? It's, how long is it going
to
take?
Well, Giuliani, I think Ira was probably trying to clean up the mess that he was seeing, or that's what he was saying.
I think you're looking in broader terms.
Yeah, I'm
right?
thinking about society and the trust in government. I mean, I've said in the past that I think it's going to take a generation.
Can I just make an international comment
yes,
on that particular
please.
Issue? I don't know if you all remember Solzhenitsyn.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Gulag Archipelago, One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. Okay, now he was a Russian Soviet dissident who was expelled from the Soviet Union, came to Vermont, right? Lived in Vermont.
Sure.
Right. He held an incredibly important address at Harvard in 1978, which I encourage all of you to reread, because what Solzhenitsyn said was the soul of America was being hollowed out, because society was media were increasingly focused on profit making rather than educating the public. And secondarily, he talked about how there's a general emphasis that seems to be growing on consumerism and self-satisfaction rather than a commitment to the essential values that the West once stood for. 1978, Solzhenitsyn's address to Harvard, the graduating class. That is an incredible essay to read, and once you read it, of course he had blind spots. Of course he didn't forecast everything we see today. But it was a fascinating moment in history when you go back and read that particular talk he gave.
Now, Vera, I have no doubt that he's right about what he's saying. Nevertheless, I'm not so sure he's right about the way it used to be. In other words, the good old days when newspapers really cared about people.
Well, I don't know that he said the good old days. He said, if you read it going forward, that fundamental values in this country were being eroded.
But I think, I don't want to, I may have heard it wrong, but I thought you were saying, basically, that things are getting worse than they were.
And what he was saying was that the Soviet Union was extremely repressive, but our model was not the answer. What he was saying is he had believed that the United States would provide a lot of responses to how to achieve democracy and freedom and justice and civil liberties and participation in society. And he was deeply and profoundly disappointed in what he found in the United States and the patterns he saw and how he, what he prognosticated would be happening in the United States. And so just going back those 30 years to take a look is an amazing moment to revisit and then think about what we're facing today.
Very interesting.
So that's my, you know, I always try to hijack a little bit and talk about international things or other influences so we don't get, you know, we don't focus exclusively on the internal U.S. perspective
and
on
now,
what's happening with Trump. Yes.
And now you've given us homework.
I have, which
good.
Is probably a nightmare
no,
to
I like,
everybody
no,
listening.
Okay.
Of course, everybody has to know how to spell Solzhenitsyn.
That's
well,
right.
You know, you can Google it.
Or you can just do 1978 Harvard address.
Yeah. So Donald Trump tweeted this morning, Mr. Cohen, an attorney, received a monthly retainer not from the campaign and having nothing to do with the campaign from which he entered into, through reimbursement, a private contract between two parties known as a non-disclosure agreement or NDA. These agreements are... Second tweet, very common among celebrities and people of wealth. In this case, it is in full force and effect and will be used in arbitration for damages against Ms. Clifford Daniels. The agreement was used to stop the false and extortionist accusations made by her about an affair, .. Next tweet, despite already having signed a detailed letter admitting there was no affair. Prior to its violation by Ms. Clifford and her attorney, this was a private agreement. Money from the campaign or campaign contributions played no role in this transaction.
Yeah, well, that's the key sentence that he's going to try to sell. Because, I mean, he could make the argument... probably with justification about all this business about non-disclosure agreements and how commonplace they are. But of course, the distinction here is he was running for president and the timing of this just smells. And he's going to make the case that it had nothing to do with the campaign. Well, that's what
well,
the courtrooms
right.
are for.
What they're all worried about is that there's a certain number of good Trump critics who are pushing the narrative that this is a violation of federal campaign laws, and that this is what apparently has them a little bit worried. So, you know, he said, I did not do this. But that just makes us think maybe he did.
Mm-hmm. You have more letters, I think.
No, I don't.
Al Lady just showed up.
Yeah.
As I read that statement by Trump, I also thought, boy, why would Trump give $130,000 to a woman that he didn't have relations with? That would set some precedent for Stormy to go tell her friends at the.
I hate to be a potential defender of Trump, but. You know, newspapers could get sued for libel, and sometimes it only happened to me once, but we were sued for $50,000 or something like that, and we knew we were in the right, but it would have cost us too much to defend
ourselves.
So we just gave the guy $5,000 to go away.
I've seen it before.
And not Trump's MO, though. He doesn't give up $130,000 to people for stuff that he didn't do.
Well, I don't know, JP. I think Trump has, if you look into his business history, I think you'll see he's basically... like Trump University and other things, gone away, gotten caught, and then sort of paid off and gone away.
But also, if he didn't know, and he just has a guy who's supposed to fix all this stuff.
Well, the guy didn't get the pleasure out of the relationship. He did, and he knew he did it, right? So the guy's just being his permanent fixer.
Well, yeah, but paying—that comes to the money, right? I mean, that's coming to the actual cash.
If you look at Trump's history, Trump doesn't even pay money to people that he actually owes money to.
Correct.
Let alone people that don't have anything on him.
Right.
Why would he set the precedent of giving Stormy Daniels $130,000 had he not done anything? She could go tell her friends, hey, go to Trump, say that you had an affair with him, and you can get $130,000 too. He wouldn't do it.
Well, maybe he's
tight.
First of all, he makes agreements and he doesn't keep them. We know that from many of his former business partners and others who you know. I saw a thing on the air yesterday where somebody was saying that one of the reasons that Trump is the lawyer thing is that lawyers won't represent Trump is because he doesn't pay them.
Doesn't get paid.
Right.
So you know, but and to Ira's point, maybe Ira's arguing, maybe, only he knows. That the $130,000 to Trump may be chump change.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah.
He claims to be worth billions. It is chump change if that's the case.
Right. Well, what I keep wondering is, since this guy's apparently been fixing these things for Trump for a long time, how does a guy continue to do what he knows is going to be incredibly unproductive for himself? But apparently not.
Well, he's never had to face the public consequences. As a private businessman, he can do whatever he wants.
Okay, so letters. Good morning, panel. Remember why Rudy fired Police Commissioner Brennan after he cleaned up New York City? He was getting more favorable publicity than Rudy. I do remember that.
Brennan would not be the name, but for the life of me now, I can't think of
it. It wasn't Brennan, huh? I thought that.
The guy who's on TV now, he's a police commissioner in L.A. and Boston.
Bratton?
Who?
Bratton.
That's who. Mm-hmm. I believe that's who he's talking about.
Mark says, hush money payment. If Giuliani claims that Trump paid Cohen through a monthly retainer, how does that cover a $130,000 payment? Usually retainers are paid monthly for services rendered. If Cohen received a regular monthly payment, wouldn't there need to be a separate payment for the $130,000? Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, there's some question as to somebody added it up and said it's more like $500,000. Or, I'm sorry, $430,000. Right,
$400,000.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And Romney says, John, panel never was a fan of Governor Romney, but don't forget Romney was given a position in the Trump cabinet. Wasn't given a position in the Trump cabinet because he wouldn't take back the things he said about Trump during the campaign. To his credit, love the roundtable, John.
Yeah, we said that because they didn't like him.
Yeah, we did say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost as if, I don't know if that's true or not, but this dinner that Trump and Romney had, right? It was almost like we all knew Romney wasn't going to be chosen, but this dinner was sort of, you know, this sort of moment where Trump could really enjoy humiliating Romney afterwards by saying, you have not been chosen, right?
And Peter writes a very interesting letter, a Rudy discussion. How are you guys missing the obvious play here? Rudy's comment is a signal to Cohen that the president has his back in the hopes he won't flip. That needs a little analysis, right? Anybody figure that one out?
I don't really get it. I'm sorry.
Well, okay. The premise of the letter is that the reason that Rudy and the president are doing this now is that they're afraid that Cohen will flip on the president. And by saying yes, the president did pay back Cohen, they are, in fact, getting his back so that he doesn't face certain criminal charges or other things that he might for lying to a prosecutor or something like that.
But there's so many other things that we believe Cohen may be accused of. I mean, it's a possibility there are a series of charges, so just that one issue will not even protect Cohen from potential criminal proceedings and, possibly imprisonment in the future. So I think I expect that there are chances for Cohen to flip anyways.
Absolutely. But don't you also think that there's a certain franticness that they're feeling in the White House right now, which is that they've got to do something? And, when Trump tweeted yesterday, I think it was the day before, that I may have to get involved in this because it's so unfair, meaning I'm going to fire Mueller, which I've always said when he was really cornered that he would have to do that. That's an interesting threat.
Well, don't forget the Giuliani interview last night overshadowed what happened earlier in the day when former lead attorney Ty Cobb left the Trump employ, was replaced by...
announced his retirement.
He didn't, according to Trump, but we think, unlike the other Ty Cobb, he didn't slide into second base with his spikes up. He was playing too clean. So they bring in this guy named Emmett Flood, who is believed to be a tough guy in the Trump mold. And so the signal is they're going to fight. And the other MO that Trump has is that he fights and he plays the longer game. He doesn't do it in negotiations in the world scene, unfortunately. But when it comes to lawsuits, he stretches these things out. And I think this is going to dominate the rest of this term. And as I said here last week, I don't think he's going to run for reelection. Mm. He'll figure out an explanation around November of the year before the election to say I can't do this because of this, and this, and I did a great job, and now we're going to have Mike Pence.
The other side of that, Ira, for whatever, I've been thinking about that a lot. The other side about that is he has immense power. President of the United States has power that nobody else has in terms of answering anything. So he may figure the other side of that may be that if I get out, I don't have those protections anymore.
Yeah, although I think he's finding out that he doesn't have quite the same amount of power as he bargained for.
I don't know. I think he has a lot of protection here. I mean, we keep seeing the arrogance because he knows he's president and knows he can't be indicted, for example, under contemporary law.
He likes that power. He can't get indicted, maybe can't get subpoenaed, and he's going to... My feeling is if he's still in office, he's going to run for re-election and go for vindication.
Although Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' attorney, omnipresent media figure, and Jeremy Meeks lookalike, said last night on CNN that he didn't think that Trump would be finishing out his term.
Yeah, he said that repeatedly. He doesn't think he's going to finish the term. Who's Jeremy Meeks? I don't know.
Look it up during the
So another thought I wanted to bring in was in terms of this whole... Trump and Giuliani have now openly sent a signal that they're going to fight, right? One of the consequences internationally is if you look at Ukraine and the Ukrainian government having discontinued its investigation into Manafort corruption scandals. Now, the Ukrainian government needs a very close relationship with the United States because it gets weapons from the U.S. and it fears if it loses U.S. protections, then the Russians will be increasingly encroaching on its political territory. So Trump internationally is having quite an impact and sending the signal that anything related to sort of accusation of having collaborated with Russian efforts is an essentially dangerous path to pursue. And we see that in our foreign relations with Ukraine now. And it's fascinating to me to see that the Ukrainian government is now cautiously icing its Manafort corruption investigations.
Wow.
Not
and
a good sign.
That, and doing that how?
By simply having delayed any further investigations to not irritate the Trump administration.
Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have lots more to talk about. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we have some more letters that should bring us up to the top of the hour. We'll have another break, and then we'll have a whole half hour to discuss a lot of other stuff. So, Alan, go ahead.
Okay, LL writes us, Alan, thank you for being the voice of reason most of the time. Trump just, I'm reading this one out of turn, by the way. Trump just signaled he's going to stop the Mueller investigation. Suppose after he fires Mueller, the Republicans refuse to take any action. That's absolutely a possibility. You're exactly right about that. A question, what happens next? Nothing. That's something. Two, where is the red line? Our democracy is in peril? ? And how much can he and his cronies steal? Trump has made no secret that he wants to use the Justice Department, the Department of Justice, to attack his political opponents. And that's Larry from Woodstock. Good letter, Larry, particularly the first sentence. Let's see here. Bill writes... Dr. Akarios Kelly mentioned the erosion of values in this country as observed by Stolzhenitsyn. I wonder how the so-called deplorables feel about those values, things like hard work, loyalty, national pride. Haven't the coastal elites forgotten those deplorables so cruelly dismissed by Hillary? Isn't it any wonder that the deplorables would turn on the malignant force known as Trump? Is it any wonder the deplorables would turn on the malignant force known as Trump? And that's Bill.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's sort of referring back to the Solzhenitsyn issue that I made mention, right? Mm-hmm. So, it is really an interesting question how to reach, a majority of people that have felt disconnected, I think, from the outcome of elections and voting and the sense that they belong to America. And I think that is something that Democrats have to fundamentally think about. Who do you run? What does your leadership look like? I mean, the future must represent all people in America, in the Midwest, those that feel, miners with their specific concerns. You know, the label of deplorables clearly was not helpful.
Right.
Does it concern you, Alan, as a political scientist, that the Democrats, for the presidency at least, don't have a clear front runner and don't appear to be in a hurry to establish one?
Well, it is of concern to me. There's a new poll out that's saying people, and it's been for quite a while now, think Joe Biden is the guy. The Democrats think Joe Biden is the guy. He's an old shoe. He is not. He's not Bernieistic in that he's too left for most Americans. I think the danger, of course, and they know it, is that there's a big fight coming between the uber left and the moderates in this country. I know where I stand. I voted for Bernie and announced it. But on the other hand, I think the Democrats have got to be, according to what Vera just said and you said, have got to be very careful about making sure that the mainstream in this country are going to go along with them.
There was a major poll. Never mind. There was a poll that was released in New Hampshire. Yes, I was reading this in the Boston Globe that said that. But of course, it's proximity. Said that Elizabeth Warren was the top vote getter in that poll, even though, of course, the primary is 21 months away. Have that be. Depressing to you. This showed that Warren was on tops, then Sanders, Biden, Cory Booker, and Cory Booker had 10%, Deval Patrick had 8%. Biden had nearly 30%, Sanders had 25%.
I just saw a poll that said Biden was on top. So these polls have to be...
Well, this is just New Hampshire.
These polls have to be...
The more imminent, I'll use the word crisis advisedly, but the more imminent crisis, and I can't recall if it was a Times editorial or a columnist or a story or a combination, is at the midterms, and that a number of the younger Democratic congressional candidates are saying that they would not support Nancy Pelosi as a speaker if they were to win the right. House, and that in general, Nancy Pelosi in her upper 70s, Congressman Clyburn in his upper 70s, Congressman Hoyer in his upper 70s, the leadership of the Congress and of the Democratic side, that ageism, and I don't say it this time in a negative way, is significant if it's going to turn off the younger next generation Democrats, and they need those people to get their support.
Bernie is old.
Yeah, Bernie was old, and Bernie lit a fire.
And you know, I mean, I think it's philosophy rather than age. I don't know.
Well, but you, I'm sorry.
No, I was just thinking. We also have to, I think, reflect on President Obama's youth and the ability to then choose somebody who was a little older. But now that Trump has been in office, I think there might be another swing towards somebody who's a little more youthful. I think those are potential swings to consider.
But to Ira's point, there's an article in the Washington Post, one that I flagged for attention, was of looking at the Democratic leaders like Dan McCready and North Carolina, is that where it is, like 35 years old, and said, well, I'm ready for there to be a Democratic wave in the House, but I don't want Nancy Pelosi to be our leader. We have to look for younger leadership. We have to look for new leadership. We have to look for somebody who's going to...
I don't think it's necessarily age. I think it's more that they want new leadership. I don't think it's because Nancy Pelosi is 60 years old or 90 years old. I think it's more that she's been around. Bernie came out. He's an old guy, but he was new.
They are
to
saying
most
a new
people.
Generation, though.
Yes. A new generation. What they're saying is you look at someone like Mitch McConnell for the Republicans. He is the Republicans' spokesperson for the U.S. Senate. He's an old, overweight, rich guy from the South. The Republicans desperately need someone new, telegenic, better speaker, Marco Rubio, to be their spokesperson. If the Democrats come in and take power and they bring out Nancy Pelosi from San Francisco as their speaker, you watch her on TV. She's just not an effective spokesperson for the party.
And
she's horrible.
And the Republicans, JP, have been spending all their time and efforts demonizing her.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's right. I'm sorry. If a Pelosi becomes the Speaker of the House and the other two leaders I cited remain in leadership positions, the Democrats are going to be setting up the Fox News opponents of the world to capitalize on them in the going to the 2020, that the race in 2020 will be as much about them as it will be whoever they nominate for president versus Trump or whoever runs.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have letters and more. We will be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, J.P. Miller, Vera Karius-Kelly, and Ira Fussfeld join us this morning. We have a couple more letters, then we'll move on to other topics.
I'll go fast. A distant relative of mine is Kevin, who says, good morning. No matter how many toppings we get daily from the White House, the POTUS is still just a boiled hot dog wrapped in white bread, covered in ketchup.
He's got to be a New York City native.
Boy, that is very, that's very specific.
What's wrong with that? Okay, so let's go. Why all of the salacious news? In all of this focus on Giuliani, who looks like Mr. Murdstone, I got into trouble because I called him the mask the other day, and somebody wrote me a nasty letter about that. Who looks like Mr. Murdstone? I don't know Mr. Murdstone. Cohen and Stormy Daniels meant to distract us from the Iran nuclear deal and Trump's potential withdrawal from it. Another shiny object, and that's from Lori. Okay, and Michael, I'm sorry, John says, can I assume that Mueller fines from the Comey office raid can be investigated? Does Mueller have limitations? If that guy is the fixer for the Don, most illegal things that have been done would have been done by him. Imagine what the FBI might have found.
Did I hear you say earlier that the president can't be indicted?
There is a theory. I've always opposed it. That the president of the United States has to be impeached before he can be indicted.
Well, and that's what the New York Times says is what the Justice Department says.
Right.
So it's not. I would say it's more than a theory. I would say it's a convention.
Well, but it's a Justice Department theory. My theory is, take it to the extreme. If the president of the United States is standing there with a revolver and kills his wife, in front of witnesses. You mean he can't be indicted for that?
Has to be impeached first. Impeach first.
That's ridiculous.
That's how it is.
Let me put it this way, JP. You may say that's how it is, and I'm going to say to you, that ain't right. That just ain't right.
Fair enough. I hear you.
That ain't right. Starch says, Giuliani interview. The Giuliani interview was a setup for Trump's tweets this morning. If you look, Giuliani gave Trump a window to explain the 130K to Stormy and still deny he knew about Stormy. Trump's tweets were well crafted this morning, which is not the norm. The 130,000K is easily traced and could have been provided easily. Now it's just a retainer. While most realized Trump was lying early on and now have it confirmed, the 37 to 39% that are still support him don't care. And Giuliani just gave them a simple explanation they can accept, just reading the red meat base.
Too long.
Too long. NDA. Everyone is missing the fact that on Air Force One, Trump said he had no knowledge of the NDA that his lawyer made. Now he is saying that the NDA is just a typical contract that everyone in Hollywood and business make all the time. So Rudy went on national TV and admitted that Trump lied. Hooray for America to have this man in the White House. Gordon. Kevin says, Trump has stiffed contractors for much smaller amounts than $130,000. It's a sign that there is more to the Stormy Daniels payment. That's from Kevin. Well, you know, Stormy Daniels is now being seen as a bit of a heroine in the United States. But you know what? She's got herself a lawyer. She said basically, my bet is that what she's saying is $130,000 is chicken change. We're going to go get more. We're going to get a lot more, so we have to get rid of this $130,000 thing. Stormy Daniels is not a heroine.
Well, if she gets more, it won't be from Trump necessarily. She's got books and stuff that she'll make real money on.
That's right. But also maybe from Trump. Janice says, Rudy, why don't people sue Rudy for libel slander? Comey is a perverted man and Hillary is a liar. Janice. Well, these are public officials.
The question I find so interesting is how does Giuliani say Hillary's a criminal? I mean, based on what?
But she's
right?
She's a public person.
Yes, I mean,
and
you
therefore,
can
under the
sure
non-wisdom of the United States Supreme Court, she can say any. They can say anything they want.
Sure, but I mean, I'm curious how somebody who claims to have a law degree and extensive experience in that area.
Well, they would allege she got rid of all of the legal documents and she smashed her files and shared classified, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And Rudy still, also in the interview kept focusing, saying there is no collusion. The Mueller has basically said there's no collusion, and this is all you know, a sideshow.
It's a lie.
Mueller said nothing.
Macron versus Kanye, says Mark. Macron's 48-minute, I believe, address before the joint session of Congress where he defended multilateralism and denounced Trumpism will go down as one of the great speeches in American history, right alongside MLK's I Have a Dream speech. When I mentioned this to a friend, he said Americans care more about Kanye than Macron. What does that say about our country and its future? Well, I think there are several premises in here that I would take some issue with, Mark, who wrote the letter, and that is that it is going to go down next, that speech is going to go down to I Have a Dream, by Martin Luther King. I liked what he had to say, but it was interesting how he was threading the needle. He goes and literally kisses Trump outside the White House, and then he stands up before the United States Congress to satisfy his constituency, and he says the exact opposite, of a kiss on the cheek. He says, this is all wrong. This nativism and everything else is all wrong. We have to have multinationalism.
On that note, I just wanted to weave in that we probably have all seen the fact that the Chinese have stopped buying soybeans from the United States,
right?
So I can't remember exactly the number, but that we're talking about like 70,000 cubic.
Huge.
Huge cubic feet? No. I forget what the measurement was for the containers.
I think.
It's all been canceled, and the Chinese are buying their soybeans from Brazil predominantly, some from Canada, but mostly from Brazil. So here we have the immediate economic impact on soybean farmers in the United States. And of course, there are certain, states, I think like Nebraska, that are directly affected by that. So,
and who have Republican senators.
62,690 metric tons of U.S.
tons.
Soybeans.
That's
what metric tons.
Sorry about that. No. Yeah, metric
good
tons.
Show. Wow.
So it seems to be a large amount of soybeans that are not being purchased. So I think some of the soybean farmers are probably getting a little nervous that the initial Chinese response is very targeted. And I think that is one of the issues that we should look at in terms of how that shifts public opinion possibly in some of the states.
Tom from Bonneville says, Tom from Catskill says, the last three Democrats to be elected president, Obama, Clinton, and Carter, were all in their 40s when they won. Take a hint, Democrats, when you choose your candidate for 2020. Mark says, Pence speaks at NRA. Pence is set to speak at the NRA convention in Texas this weekend. Is this a signal of a near future shift in presidential power? Anybody got that one?
I thought Trump was going to speak again.
I thought I heard that. And
I
presume
both,
you've talked...
both of them are going to be
there. Yeah, I presume you talked about Pence's comments the other night about Sheriff Joe. Where he,
oh, Arpaio?
He gave a speech somewhere and Arpaio was in the audience. And Pence said how proud he was to be in his company. I mean, this is a guy who was convicted and then pardoned by Trump, but he's a despicable character on a number of levels. And Pence, who a lot of people have wondered about, given the potential of him being the next president, did not do himself any favor with those who might be willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
The vice president and the president are expected to speak at the NRA convention.
Hmm. Yeah. I said that. I want credit. I just said it. Okay. And Mike says, did you all read the leaked tape by The Intercept about Hoyer pressuring the more progressive candidates in Colorado, formerly of the Obama administration, to drop out? These stories are of the middle pressuring the progressives have been rampant, and they're going to keep the apathy the people felt after Bernie's treatment by his own party running rampant. Thanks as always, Mike.
Well, what do you think of that if it's true? I mean, is there not a political strategy, a realistic political strategy that says that the Democrats have a better chance of winning with moderates running as opposed to far further left progressives?
I would say yes.
Well, there's also an example happening in Syracuse with the preferred candidate Dana Balter. The national party, the DCCC, has recruited Juanita Perez Williams to run against her. And so what I think that a lot of people, Democrats especially at the grassroots level, are saying, we should be able to choose our candidates. Our candidates shouldn't be chosen by Washington. Hillary was, you know, clearly the Democrats nationally wanted Bernie to be their candidate, yet the National Democratic Party was basically fixed in Hillary's favor. That's what Donna Brazile tells us. So I think that the National Party should listen to those at the grassroots and allow them to bring up their own candidates and not dictate that.
Okay, so Susan says, candidate, age doesn't matter. Bernie was and remains popular because of his ideas and that he's not a typical moderate. Bernie is loved by many, and that says a lot for today's politicians.
All right. Let's move on to other subjects and find out what else we can talk about. So Cambridge Analytica has gone bankrupt.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Not, you know, are those tears in your eyes?
No, but I mean, I'm curious about what happens to all the data they collected, right? Who has that? What's going to happen with it? These people still have a lot of information stored somewhere that has not been returned. Somebody's hands.
Well, we know whose hands it's in, right? They were working closely with Trump's campaign.
Well, yeah, but your point is that they have all this stuff. They've retained all of this data. So where does that go?
Where does it go?
If the company dissipates, then where does that?
Right.
Who does that get?
Who controls it?
Well, let's put it this way, Joe. Somebody's got it. I mean, much of it was used by the Trump campaign the last time around and will be used again this time. But it's a very good question, Vera.
I mean, their intellectual property.
where does that go? Mm-hmm. So,
well, I think that the other another company would have to purchase it from Cambridge Analytica, and the way that usually these type of firms work is they shut down one firm, and then all the crew mm-hmm. from that firm will go and start their own firm, and they'll pitch to clients and say, "We were the folks at Cambridge Analytica. We have all this data." That's how they'll market mm-hmm. themselves. But the actual data that they have from Facebook, I think there were tens of thousands of organizations that called that data. So that data is certainly helpful. But it's not like they're the only firm in the world that has it. There are a lot of entities that have that Facebook data, including the Democratic Party.
The other news story to come out of Iowa is the story about Iowa lawmakers passing an abortion bill, ultimately looking to take it to the Supreme Court with Roe versus Wade in its sights. The Iowa legislators debated a bill that would outlaw most abortions after 6 weeks at the state capitol. They approved what would be the nation's strictest abortion law on Wednesday, the move intended to pose an aggressive challenge to Roe versus Wade and reignite the conservative debate and the conservative energy before the midterm elections in November.
Well, you know, this is coming. I think everybody who has been concerned about this issue is more concerned now than ever. One of the things that's going on in New York State is there's a move on to pass a bill that would reinforce New York's law that allows people to make up their own choices. And I've been getting mail on that from people who are, because, you know, New York has passed states' rights. New York allows, abortion. And that isn't happening, I suspect, because of the Republicans who still control the state Senate by just a little, hanging on there. Now, why do the Republicans control the New York State Senate? Because of a man named Simca Felder, who is staying with the Republicans, even though he's always run as a Democrat. Last time he ran as a Democrat and a Republican. So we do know that there's a certain antipathy among certain religious groups to abortion. The New York State Senate is, until they lose, and they are going to lose this time, they're going to be in the minority, will stay with it. They are a big problem.
Well, and the broader point regarding the Iowa situation and the rest of the country, New York notwithstanding, is that the longer Trump is in office, or if Pence succeeds him, the more conservative judges are going to be packing these carts all the way up to the Supreme
Court. Absolutely right.
So, it's hard to be confident that a law like Roe v. Wade is going to survive long term if the Supreme Court changes.
And it becomes up to the states.
All right. One other story that we can get to before in the 3 or 4 minutes that we have left. And that's just the overall story. We've been talking about about Trump's doctor and the raids and all that stuff. But there's an interesting article in the Washington Post of looking at what we now know or what we don't know about the president's medical history. And if he personally dictated the Queen Bill of Health to his longtime personal physician, or he didn't, and whatever happened with Ronnie Jackson, what we don't know is we have no clear sense of what his physical fitness is.
Other than what we can see for ourselves.
Exactly. I was just about to say that. I mean, yes, there is the obvious, of course, but then where? So NBC published an article with Bornstein, who was his doctor during the campaign and had been his doctor, in which the former doctor described a morning raid in his office, which seized all of his records. This is the men included Keith Schiller, Trump's longtime bodyguard, who at the time worked in the White House, and the Trump Organization's top lawyer. The 30-minute incident left him feeling raped, frightened, and sad. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders told reporters that it was standard operating procedure for the White House medical unit to take possession of the president's medical records, and a spokesman for Garten also defended the process.
Garten being the lawyer for the White House.
My apologies, right. Yes. Alan Garten, the Trump Organization's top lawyer. So
Then Bornstein tells CNN that the letter was personally dictated, that the letter that he read to that was ultimately brought to Dr. Oz, I believe, during the campaign. I wish I were making this up. I wish I were making this up.
Remind me what that was about.
When Trump said, had his medical, that he was healthy, he had the doctor, he dictated the letter to the doctor. The doctor wrote the letter, put it on his stationery. Trump then gets into a car, goes over to Dr. Oz's studio at 30 Rock, goes into the studio, sits down with Dr. Oz and says, here's the letter. Dr. Oz looks at it as if he's looking at the Magna Carta and starts to read this thing.
Right.
And that was the...
So the real question for all of us coming out of this subject that you've just raised is, what's he got?
Well, whatever it is. First of all, Sarah Sanders is probably right that the White House has to take possession of his medical records. But they don't have to send a goon squad in to get it. If the White House is entitled to it, then fine. Here it is. So there's that. And secondly, to your question, this was like a game show. If I recall seeing that interview, Trump went on the air with Dr. Oz.
Yes.
And Dr. Oz said something, do you mind if I tell him your cholesterol? Something to that. You think we should do it? And then the audience cheers. I mean, this is Paddy Chayefsky's network come to life. So I don't know what he has. As an overweight man of nearly 70 years old, I'm not going to dictate to somebody else how to be healthy. But this guy is the president of the United States, and the public absolutely has a need to know the health
and
of their president.
And they lied to the public. That's the point.
Yes, well, that's one in 11.
I mean, the other thing is I'm really taken aback by all these medical professionals that engage in such conduct. I mean, if in fact you're a physician and somebody dictates a letter to you, I'm sorry. I don't think I let my students dictate to me their evaluations of themselves and then sign it. I mean, this is disturbing to the utmost.
I agree with you so much. And there was a quote in this article. The American Medical Association has a code of ethics, but there is no single list of standards to which all physicians should adhere.
No, but there is HIPAA.
That's concerning.
It is concerning.
That's privacy.
Yeah, that's privacy.
So you don't think that if an admission by a doctor that I let my patient write the letter is not something that could cost him his medical license?
I would hope so.
I would hope so,
but
too.
I don't know.
It just seems open and shut.
All right.
I mean, I'm not quite sure what to say about this morning, but it's not good.
Well, more to come. We'll take a that's it for today for the panel. I got to take a break. Then we have more show, but thank you all very much. We'll be back right after this.